Ladies and gentlemen, my name is
Scott.
Hey, yo.
Is that his younger brother? It's gotta be
Jeff.
The cream will rise to the top, oh yeah.
And you're listening to
all of the great action figures from our good friends at Hasbro.
The Fully Posable.
Have your own WrestleMania with all your favorite figures.
Wrestling figure.
He's sold separately from LJN.
Podcast.
And we are the Mount Rushmore of professional wrestling.
Hey, welcome to Fully Posable's special interview with Rob Schamberger. My name is Jeff Singh. Alongside next to me is my real-life brother, not storyline brother, Scott. Scott, say hello.
Hello.
On the line, world-renowned artist Rob Schamberger. How you doing over there, Rob?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
You're busy scheduled to do it.
It's a massive honor for you.
Actually, it is, yes.
So the first question I want to ask, who is the most obscure wrestler that any fan has come up to you and asked for you to paint?
Oh, boy. Back when I did my original Kickstarter, one of the pledge levels was I would do a painting for you. And someone did that and they wanted a painting of themselves as a wrestler. And I'm like, oh, that's lame. But I'll put your face on Stone Cold's body or whatever. And the guy comes back and he's like, you know, that'd be cool, but I've got another idea. Can you do a painting of me as the wrestler I created for the video game? And, you know, I create a wrestler thing. And he sends it to me. And I'm like, oh, man, this is weird. I do it, you know, it's all like Uncanny Valley stuff, but he writes me back. He's like, you know, this is great. This is perfect. And my mom loves it. It was my present to her.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
So no one's come up to you and asked you to do Oz or Vinny Vegas or Dungeon of Doom?
I haven't had any of that. And studied a lot of like Memphis wrestling, and they had this champion named the Dragon Master. Have you heard of the Dragon Master?
No, we're unfamiliar with that one. Master.
He was like this like 7-foot giant that would come out wearing this like floppy rubber dragon mask that looked like an adult toy. And in his first match, he beats Lawler for the title, and then they discover that he doesn't know how to wrestle. And 2 weeks later, Lawler beats him back for the title, and he never wrestled again.
Wow.
It's like, you'll have to look up on YouTube USWA debut of the Dragon Master. It's essentially like the Shockmaster that became world champion. And it's phenomenal.
I want to see the mask.
Now, are we talking Shockmaster with the Stormtrooper helmet or with the hard hat?
Either. You know, those like that or like the gobbledygooker, you know, those like really bad gimmicks that may have looked good on paper, but then in execution didn't work out.
Awesomely horrible.
Yeah, with Memphis rules, that meant that they turned him into a world champion.
I thought I'd ask that question for our mutual friend, Brian Breaker. He loves obscure characters like that, like Dungeon of Doom, anything obscure in WCW or WWE, he loves those types of things. So I thought I'd ask that for him.
I bet he can go deep on the history of like who the guy was that was a Dragon Master. Because seriously, he didn't work before, didn't work after. And it wasn't like, you know, like Glenn Jacobs or something under it. It was just some dude, some really tall dude that they, you know, Lawler saw and said, this guy will be a draw, you know?
He's 7 feet. He has to be.
Yeah.
So, Rob, you mentioned Memphis wrestling. How long have you been a wrestling fan, and what are your first memories or your first memories of watching a particular match?
I actually didn't get into it until I was 18, so around 1998.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Grew up in a single mother household and with one TV, and I think Murder, She Wrote was on at the same time as wrestling. So I didn't get to watch it.
Oh, man, yeah.
And then she remarried, and my stepfather was a big fan back in the 60s and 70s and would go to here in Kansas City to go watch Harley and Bob Geigel and Bulldog Bob Brown and those guys. And he hadn't watched in years, but he was flipping through the channels and landed on Ric Flair doing a promo. And it was like the clouds parted. I heard the Angel Choir. I was like, I get this. I love this. You know, like as a kid, like, you know, I knew about Hulk Hogan and stuff just because I also walked down a toy aisle. I think I had an Iron Cheek LJN when I was a kid, but I didn't really watch it. You know, like occasionally my stepbrothers would put the Iron Claw on my face, but that was and then, yeah, it was like 18 or 19. And then I would go to my parents to do laundry every Monday and didn't know that there were two different shows on at the same time, right? Mm-hmm. And was just looking for wrestling again. And that next week landed on Raw. And, you know, 98, 99, they were firing on all cylinders. So,
right.
Yeah, been a huge fan since.
Yeah, you came in at a really good time with the Attitude Era. Did you have a preference, one or the other, WWF or WCW?
Definitely WWF.
Us too, yeah.
Especially at that time, WCW was on the decline. A friend of mine's uncle got like 9 free tickets to that WCW pay-per-view that had like the triple cage where Marquette was champion.
Oh, and yes.
My buddy and I could not find anyone else to go with us. So
you couldn't give them away.
We had our own row. And, it was not my cup of tea. You know, there were a lot of people out there that were trying hard and doing, you know, there were a couple of memorable spots like Hogan threw Kidman through a vertical table. That was pretty rad. But otherwise, you know, then there's also that triple cage monstrosity. And it was not my favorite show I've ever been to.
Now, when you started watching in 98, did you go out and collect any figures at the time?
Not really. Like when Ric Flair came over to WWF, or maybe it was WWE by then, I can't remember. That was actually like my first figure was a buddy got one of those for me. It was, you know, Rick in the red robe. I don't know what series it's from or anything. I took it out of the damn package and put it on a shelf. But it's one of those things like I don't gamble or I don't drink hard liquor because I know that I have to like obsess about it, right? And So I have to limit the things that I collect or else I'll get way too deep into it. I you know, like kind of hold back on the figures myself. And it was more like, now I've got a massive comic book collection, but you know, it's like I just have to limit myself or I'll be poor with a whole bunch of really cool stuff on my shelf.
So you mentioned that Ric Flair in the red robe, which I think was a Classic Superstars, that might've been series 2. So we're talking maybe like 03, 04. Did you really get into the Jax figures after that? Did you start collecting any of the Classic Superstars or any of the 2-packs?
That was my only figure.
Oh, wow. Wow. So you just watched the product. You didn't collect the figures.
Yeah, it's like the first taste is free, you know. My friend got that for me for Christmas, but I just, you know, like couldn't allow myself to start doing that. Like just recently, I started buying like Godzilla stuff, and I'm like, oh, Rob, what have you done to yourself? Now I've got Godzilla crap all over the place.
So you mentioned the comic book collection. Are you mainly DC or Marvel guy?
Right now more DC than Marvel. I follow creators more than the titles. But overall I've generally, other than like the X-Men, been more of a DC guy. I like heroes and actual villains, and a lot of Marvel stuff is that gray area.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, there's also times where there's just been really excellent creators on books, and I'm a fan of that more than anything.
Okay, any preference on the movies, Marvel or DC?
Oh, on the movies, definitely the Marvel stuff. I liked the first 2/3 of Wonder Woman a lot.
Yes.
Like when she went over the top and went through No Man's Land, that was one of the most emotional moments in any movie I've ever seen.
That was awesome.
But the finale, like, they did not stick the landing, I don't think. But everything else I liked a lot. But otherwise, like, that Zack Snyder take on the DC stuff, I just feel like it's not the right thing for those characters, especially right now, right? Like, we need heroes. We need something to believe in and hope in. And Superman is perfect for that. And for whatever reason, they're not going with that. But, you know, they could turn that around at any moment.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I really want DC to right the ship. I'm more of a, growing up, I collected comics as well, and I was always a DC guy. Batman's my favorite hero. So I really want to see DC right the ship. But, man, with Marvel putting out the great films that they are, it's I think that they should basically step out and not try to compete with what Marvel's doing and kind of do their own thing. And I hope that they get back on that track.
Yeah, I hope so, too. I haven't seen Black Panther yet, and Marvel, the last few movies didn't like blow me away, but when they really nail it, they really nail it. You know, like Civil War is one of the best superhero movies ever.
I agree with you.
The first Guardians of the Galaxy is tremendous. The first Iron Man I loved.
Phenomenal.
Although even the ending on that wasn't perfect. And of course the first Avengers, but I'm hearing just amazing things about Black Panther and I'm excited to see that.
Yeah, definitely.
So Rob, you got into it in 1998, and then when did you really start getting full bore into wrestling? Was it like 01, or were you just kind of loosely watching it around 98, or was it full bore go?
It was one of those immediate things. Just again, it's, you know, like my obsessive thing. I think it goes, you know, like with comic books, right? Like back then you bought them off the spinner rack at the grocery store. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's in the middle of, you know, like the like Justice League issue 350 or whatever, right? And, and then you have to like go back and find all the stuff before and like piece stories together and find things out. And so wrestling was like that too. Like you can jump in and just immediately enjoy the show, but then also like there's this whole history that you can get into. And, you know, like, again, you know, my stepfather went, you know, back in the day. So he started telling me stories about guys that, you know, weren't even mentioned. So I'm like, oh, there's this whole other mythology that I can look into. And love that. I mean, it was more about like watching it on TV and then reading about it online. It was a while before like I actually like paid to go to a show, but also I was young and broke. So
makes it hard.
Yeah. I didn't go too much, but I loved reading up on it. And then by the time I was able to start going, you know, more often I was. And then my now wife, when we first started dating, I lucked out and I got a gal that loves wrestling. She didn't when we first started seeing each other, but the Royal Rumble is actually my favorite event out of the year. And my buddy and I would always do a Rumble party. And I invited her along because we'd only been seeing each other for like 3 months or so. And she just, you know, thought that she was being the good girlfriend, but in her mind, like she's rolling her eyes and she's like, oh, wrestling. But then she comes over and this would have been the 2007 Rumble that Undertaker won.
Yes. Uh-huh. And, that was awesome.
Yeah. Well, like she sees the Taker and she sees Ric Flair and she's like, wait a second. And she had grown up, her dad is a massive wrestling fan, but she hadn't technically watched with him. He's a notorious tight ass, and he like would go to that channel for like the pay-per-views but wouldn't pay for it. So she would So Undertaker was actually her favorite character growing up, but she'd never seen him.
Oh wow. Oh man.
And so like she's seen it in person and like all these memories of, you know, of being with her dad when she was young like start flooding back. And at the time, like, she and her dad hadn't like way over the top bonded. And actually, like, when she started getting into wrestling, it turned out he still was watching, still does. He actually uses our network account because, again, he's a tight ass, but
he's holding form.
Yeah. So like he'll text her stuff and you know, like it's totally obvious that like he's reading the sheets and everything.
That's great.
Like, stuff that he'll ask about, like, she, you know, he's wanting her to ask me like if I have any input on this. And I'm like, honey, that hasn't been mentioned on TV. That's only online.
That's going to be us when we're his age. I guarantee it. We're going to be all over those sites too.
So is he just walking around the neighborhood looking for a free Wi-Fi signal too?
It wouldn't shock me at all. Houses, but he uses our network subscription.
That's great. Hey, that $9.99 a month, man, it's a killer.
Yeah.
Now, have you gone back and kind of fallen in love with a certain character of the past, maybe like a Junkyard Dog or a Superfly or anybody like that?
Oh, probably like, I'm going to sound a little snooty hipster here, but like George Hackenschmidt, you know, the first ever world champion.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Like all this stuff that he invented, like he was definitely one of those Renaissance man types, like wrote like dozens of books about topics like gardening and stuff. Like,
wow.
And for people that work out, the hack squat, that's actually named after him. He invented that, you know, maneuver. And his title match with Gotch, where Gotch became a champion, it was like this massive event, like in national history. Like, it's not talked about much now because, you know, wrestling and everything, but like it was like one of the first like huge public events. And he's like one of those American dream types, you know, like he came, you know, he was an immigrant and came to America and like really became something big. And then I can't remember which country he came from, but like Austria or Germany, one of those. And I'm sure the internet will correct me.
Oh, they will.
Fascinating dude. Really fascinating.
So, Rob, you mentioned that you got into it in 98 and you became obsessed with it and you had to find out, like you mentioned, more backstory on wrestling and past matches and whatnot. How did you go about doing that? Did you try to get your hands on old wrestling magazines? Did you rent tapes or DVDs? There was no network back in 98, unfortunately. So how did you go about kind of filling in your backstory on wrestling?
A lot of DVDs and like not so much the VHSs, because those were always kind of a little too corny for, you know, like my snooty highbrow nature I had at the time.
The Coliseum videos, you mean?
Yeah.
I agree.
Although I think it's cool they have those up on the network now. But, getting like some of those like career retrospectives and those kinds of things. And then also just like online with, you know, message boards and like formative days of like Wikipedia, where you could like really like dig in on a topic and then, you know, really learn about it. But, you know, like just being able to like go to a secondhand video store and they have like five different ECW best ofs or whatever. Like I would go crazy for that kind of stuff.
Did you have a preference in terms of later on, like if you had to look back, have you watched any old WCW or do you prefer ECW? Do you like old school WWF, like the 80s? Do you have a preference in like an era of wrestling?
Like that early 80s, late 70s Crockett stuff.
It's
badass. Also like early to mid 80s AWA. You know, there's a lot of like, you know, here's like this young stud named Leon White, right? You know, like the cup of coffee that Stan Hansen was there for. Back when they called him Big Scott Hall, you know, like seeing these guys that went on to become just massive stars elsewhere, like getting their feet wet there. I enjoyed that a ton.
Like Scott Steiner too. He was there for a cup of coffee.
Yeah. A lot of people kind of flew through AWA. But that was kind of how it was back then, you know, like working different shows and you never get stale and there were places to make money and learn different techniques.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you find yourself watching a lot of network now?
I don't go like delve into the older stuff much, mainly because like all day I'm kind of immersed in wrestling and I don't want to do it more when I go home.
I totally understand. Already, yeah.
Dedicating like 5 to 7 hours a week between Raw, SmackDown, 205 and NXT. And then that's not including, you know, like when there's a Sunday event. And again, my wife loves wrestling, but also I don't want to push it.
Yeah. Yeah. Be thankful for what you have. Don't stretch it.
And then when I'm painting, like I'll have stuff like Netflix or whatever on more for the dialogue. And wrestling, if I'm going to have it on, I'm going to watch it. And that doesn't work too well when I'm painting.
So the very first time I ever saw any of your paintings was back in 2014 at WrestleMania 30.
Oh.
And I talked to you for a brief second. I don't expect you to ever remember me talking to you in 2014, but...
You were the guy.
That was him, yes.
That was me, yes, yes. So
he was that guy.
You were working on the 30 years of WrestleMania painting.
Uh-huh.
And you were in the middle of doing it at Access. How did you even get started? And I never saw the finished product, unfortunately. How did it turn out?
Magnificent. I painted it. I mean, come on. Glorious.
We knew it was going to be awesome. We just had to make sure.
That was actually my first appearance with the company. I had started working with them a few months before, like behind the scenes. But that was like my first public thing. So WrestleMania 30, you see me before you even walk into Access, and no pressure at all. 7-foot by 5-foot painting with like 40 different characters on it. You know, like no, I wasn't biting off more than I could chew at all. it was a fun thing. Like the company knew they wanted me painting something there, and I reached out to Ben Brown, the archivist. He's the guy that gets to go to the warehouse and see all the old props and everything, and like actually catalog it. Like I was met him at a show once, and I was talking with him, and he had just gotten done cataloging every known wrestling bear. Like, that's his job.
Wow. That's actually awesome.
Yeah. So he felt like, you know, 30 years, we're celebrating the history of WrestleMania. This would be a good one to do something like that there. And he and I worked together on what moments we wanted included and putting it all together in a certain way, like which ones were bigger, you know, represented on there or smaller. The four biggest pieces were Hogan looking at Andre, because it's the biggest main event in wrestling history.
Absolutely.
Mania. And then Austin and The Rock staring at each other, because they're the only people that have main evented WrestleMania 3 times against each other.
And then Hogan and Warrior were in the center, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, Warrior was back in the fold, and I think Hogan had just come back, too, at that point.
Yep.
So we really wanted that represented. And, it was really cool, like, the tremendous response that we got from people. We were just supposed to be selling original paintings there, and I had made these books that, like, showed, like, what paintings we had available, and the guy with WWE shop that I work with, he comes out to see things, and he's flipping through the book, and he's like, these prints, that's what we should be selling. And I'm like, well, it's funny you mentioned that, because he would, you know, like key in on that. And I had brought a bunch with me, and we ended up counting them into the inventory for the store there. And we put them on like a spinner rack thing, kind of like how comics were. Mm-hmm. And bring them out, and people were pulling them off the rack before we could even set them down on the floor. Oh. It was like a zombie feeding frenzy.
That's great.
They saw the reaction to that, and they're like, okay, we're going to work with this guy. Like,
nice.
We're going to, you know, start, you know, committing here. And it ended up going really well.
Oh, did anybody try placing a bid for that 30 years of WrestleMania painting?
The company actually bought that, and it's hanging on the second floor of headquarters.
Oh, I've heard of that building once or twice.
Yeah. Wow. Might have seen a few pictures. That's quite an honor.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. Like, I've got quite a bit hanging up there now. Like, I think I've got 10 paintings in the talent relations department, and then Triple H has two in his office, and Vince actually has one in his.
That is awesome. So
what an honor.
Yeah, that's an amazing honor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Out of all the ones that you've done, you've made a ton of paintings. Do you have a soft spot for a certain one? Do you have a favorite?
Yeah. Actually, like at WrestleMania 30, I hand painted the coat. Well, it was beforehand, actually just a few days before, but I hand painted the coat that Warrior wore in his final appearance.
Oh, man.
So like, you watch Raw, that coat, when he's holding the microphone, that's my signature right there on the sleeve.
Oh, wow.
It's powerful. And for a long time, I thought that was going to be my all-time favorite. And then I actually got to know the family of Connor Crusher, the Mahalik family.
Uh-huh.
And the next year, when they did the inaugural Warrior Award, I reached out to WWE, and I made a painting of Warrior and Connor together. And I surprised the family with it backstage at Hall of Fame right after, they did that amazing moment with receiving the award. And that one is, I'll probably never do anything that'll mean more than that.
That's awesome, man.
That's amazing. I'm floored by that. That is just, I mean, those two accomplishments right there, to be able to do Warrior's jacket and then make that painting for Connor. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's sometimes I'll have bad days. You know, I'm a human being, and this tremendous fortunate life that I have. Sometimes I'll still have a bad day, and I'll think about those things, and it's like, okay, some of the things that I may not enjoy as much, like someone being rude to me on Twitter or whatever. Like, I still get to do this other stuff that really means something. And it's fortunate.
Rob, off the top of your head, you mentioned that when you were doing that 30 years of WrestleMania at WrestleMania 30, they had you kind of focus on either certain matches or certain superstars. If you had to do a Mount Rushmore, what four faces would you put on that?
Oh, for WWE history?
For the history of wrestling in all of your readings and past matches, if you had to put four faces on the mountain, who would you put up there?
Oh boy, that's tough getting it down to just four.
It is. It's almost an impossible question.
Because like right off the bat, you have Hackenschmidt and Fez, and then what? Right? Like,
okay, that's two. you only get two more.
You know, it's like normally, like you would say, then like Hogan and Austin, but I think. Probably Austin, and then I'm gonna throw a curveball here because I'm looking at the future, Charlotte Flair.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, looking ahead. I like that.
Yeah, I do too.
No Ric Flair, but Charlotte.
It's gonna be a really big deal. Like, I don't, you know, like if there's anyone that is going to main event a WrestleMania in a women's match, one of the competitors will be her.
How did you get your foot in the door with WWE, by the way?
It's actually a pretty cool story. At first I did a Kickstarter for a project I'm still working on, which is painting every world champion going all the way back to Hackenschmidt, and still working on that. But I was showing those at the Dan Gable Museum in Waterloo, Iowa. They were doing their annual National Wrestling Hall of Fame event, and met Jim Ross and Jerry Briscoe, and they saw the work, and you know, we got to talk a little and stayed in touch. And then SmackDown was coming through Kansas City here, and I thought that would be a great opportunity to do a fundraiser for Make-A-Wish. And I was able to like actually fully adopt a kid's wish, like get him to go to Disneyland to meet Darth Maul was what he wanted.
Oh, awesome.
And yeah, really cool. And I had reached out to Jim to pass my info along to the company about this event. That's all I was after, right? Because I didn't feel like I was ready yet to ask. Like, I didn't feel like I was there yet skill-wise and business-wise. And he passed it along, and it was great. Like, the company and Triple H tweeted out about it. They sent me merchandise that we did a raffle with. It was really awesome. But then also Jim called Triple H and said, you need to work with this kid. And I get a call from guy that runs WWE Shop, and he's like, yeah, we had a department head meeting and everybody pitched how we want to work with you, and here's our multi-year plan and blah blah blah. And I'm like, so, you know, like, I'm sure you want to stop and think about this, and you know, and I'm like, no, let's start working.
Yeah, let's do it right now. Where do I sign?
And that was when they brought back WWE Auction, and they thought that my artwork would be something that would really stand out there.
That makes sense. Yeah.
So, like, I and still have my own section on that site, and then pretty soon, you know, things started going with WWE Shop, and I actually have more products than anyone else on there now. you know, like I've got more than like John Cena, right? However, all my stuff combined probably sells less still than John Cena's.
What is John Cena?
Yeah. We need some Rob Schamberger armbands. We need some jorts.
I'd wear both.
And so, you know, I'll do various appearances at shows for them, and mostly I'm less appearances and more just like working in the back. Like I'll get the wrestlers to sign the prints and stuff now, and we do like a few like video things for my Canvas to Canvas series that I do with WWE, and mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty dang cool.
Is there any one wrestler that you just, I know that sounds weird, but you just love to paint, or like you just, I don't know, you just kind of channel a whole different side of Rob and just go to town on it for one certain wrestler?
There's a certain type where I can really push it. And I say it's the difference between Superman and Batman. Like if you draw Superman, you just draw Superman. Mm-hmm. If you draw Batman, you can kind of do whatever, right? And it's still recognizable as Batman. So like Undertaker or Macho Man or Finn Balor or Bray Wyatt or Asuka, like I can really push it with them and really go far, and it's still part of their character, part of their persona. You know, like meanwhile, like John Cena, if I'm going to paint John Cena, I'm going to paint John Cena. But if I'm going to do, you know, like one of these other people, like I recently did one of Asuka that I think is like the best thing I've ever done. And I was able to like really go there with it, you know, and her character is so already larger than life that pushing it even a little further actually feels right. You know, like I wouldn't do like a lot of crazy design stuff with Cena or, you know, even like really Roman Reigns. You really just kind of want to get their likeness and their energy down and kind of keep it at that. Otherwise, especially the people that are fans of their work, would be like, what's this weird stuff? You know, like I just want a picture of Roman. So have to keep that.
I think it's really cool that you're able to kind of go outside the box a little bit with certain characters. And I think that that really fits in well with action figures, because you can kind of do the same thing with the wrestling figures. And you do have a deal with Mattel. Can you tell us kind of how that deal with Mattel came about and how much longer we can expect to see your work on the Elite packaging?
Yeah, it started, I want to say, when I was in San Jose for WrestleMania, someone that works for Mattel like came by and introduced themselves and said, you know, like, you know, we're actively pitching ideas on how we can work with you. And I was like, okay, you know,
awesome.
And you know, like then, you know, didn't hear anything, and then in Dallas, you know, it was like, hey, you know, like, it was good seeing you again. And you know, we're still pitching ideas. I'm like, okay, great. And then shortly before last year's WrestleMania, you know, we actually had like a pretty serious phone call about it and, you know, pitching ideas. And, you know, I kind of told them like, you know, what kind of deal I was looking for. And then I didn't hear anything. And I'm like, ah, well, at least they talked to me. And then, at WrestleMania Access last year was when I got the email like, okay, we're going to go ahead with this. And so it's like, there I am at Access, and it was my first time like actually inside part of Access and like having a tremendous response and like things that, you know, I felt were like really going well. And then I get that email and it just made everything else, you know, look a little bit smaller because that was so big, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I knew exactly like what it meant visibility wise for me.
For sure.
And then shortly after that, I started painting on it, and it's 9 waves that I'm contracted for.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah. And so was it 84 through 92. If I've got those numbers right, sorry.
I think I'll check.
we'll check into that. We'll check into that.
Okay. The internet will correct me.
The internet will.
Yeah.
My fans are pretty sharp.
So I've discovered.
Yeah. Pitchforks and torches if you're not correct.
and it's cool, you know, because like they had just come to me and said, hey, we want to use your art somehow. What ideas do you have? And I was thinking about like those old X-Men toys where you could build a Sentinel, or like Justice League where you build like a Gorilla Grodd, right?
Yep.
And I'm like, what if we do like a build a painting thing? You know, like you have sections of it that you get, and like each one will, you know, like feature that character prominently, but you put them all together and it makes one big image.
Yep.
And I, you know, was told him like I can do it different stylistically for each wave so that everyone realizes, you know, like this is something different here. And they really got into that. And then somehow I successfully told them, you know, like I need to have my name on the packaging. And they went for it. It's right there on the front.
Sweet.
You know? Yeah.
Sweet. You deserve it. That is 100% your work, and it's amazing. It looks great.
Oh, thank you. But I don't know that any other artist has ever been able to do that. And I hope it paves the way for others. And also, I'm glad I'm the first.
Yeah.
Well, we got to tell you, because they were putting in these dioramas previous to your artwork. And the dioramas were just missing. It was like,
yeah, they were just kind of generic. It was like a backstage setting or something.
It was
weird,
a backstage setting, or the wrestler was in the ring and it was kind of the crowd in the background.
It didn't add much to the figure.
But when they put your painting in with it, it changed the game. Like, absolutely. It just added a whole different thing to the elite figures. And we love it so much more than just that generic background that Scott just said.
Yeah, everything we've seen from the listeners in regards to feedback on that edition of the backdrop that Rob's doing now has just been completely positive. It looks amazing. And Rob, congratulations on that, man. That is such a huge get. You know, as Jeff mentioned, the first time that we were aware of your work or that we first met you was at WrestleMania 30. And you took time out of doing that huge painting. Like you said, you had a lot on your plate. There was a lot of pressure on you. But you were interacting with fans. You weren't rude to anybody. You were completely cool. And it's just great when you see good things happen to good people. And we both, Jeff and I, just want to say, and our listeners as well, just want to say congratulations. Your work is amazing. And all of the good things that are coming to you and all the good things you've been able to experience with WWE, you deserve it. So congratulations, man. That's just, you have our dream job. And there may be bad days, but man, you are truly living the dream.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's, you know, like back when I had a day job and I would wake up, you know, to the alarm, and it was like the alarm was like a middle finger to me. At the start of the day. Or it would just go off and I'd be like, why? You know, like that would be the first word in my brain when I would wake up. And it's not like that anymore. Even when, like, you know, I'll do a bigger show like Access, that like a lot of hours and a lot of work goes into it, and I'm physically exhausted, I'm still having a blast the whole time. And that I get to do this every day is, just something that I don't take lightly at all.
So before we wrap things up with you, one thing we like to do with our guests is we like for them to have a wish list, maybe a figure that they want to see done later down the road. Do you happen to have a wish list?
Other than the Dragon Master?
That mask is going to be tough, man.
Oh, man. Bill needs to jump on this. The other day, Cassius Ohno, Chris Hero, and I were joking with him that he really needs to make a Missing Link one.
Yes.
And he's all about that.
Oh, you know,
it's just convincing the retailers to jump on it, I think.
That would be awesome.
You know, like, so several of those guys, like, would be fun. Have they done a gobbledygooker toy?
Well, they were they showed one off at San Diego Comic-Con a few years ago, and it was a prototype, but it never came out. So
got our hopes up though.
Oh, I know. That's on our wish list every single week when we
watch. Yep. I know it's there's been a couple times like they'll send me the lineup for, you know, who will be in a wave, and I'll send it, you know, my mock up to them for approval from them and WWE, and then they'll come back and they're like, okay, this person's not in there anymore. And I'm always like, is this some kind of political thing happening, like behind the scenes? But it turns out it's, you know, just the retailers like, listen, our sales data show us that this thing's not going to move. And so there's probably not as many gobbledygooker fans out there as we hope that there would be.
Well, actually, that's good to know who's kind of making the call on these figures that get canceled, because they'll be announced for a wave. And then all of a sudden the official announcement comes out. That figure's gone and we're stuck kind of holding the bag like, okay, we were expecting it. Who made the call to axe it? That's kind of good to know that it is the retailers then.
Yeah, it's just economic reality, you know. I'm sure it was really awesome for, I don't even want to say any names, but look at your favorite pig warmer, right? Mm-hmm. And it was cool for that person that they had a toy made, but not so cool for the store that's left with like a warehouse full of them, very, you know? True.
Are you talking about Tito Santana at Target?
Any names.
Way to put him on the spot.
We love Tito Santana over here.
We do.
We really do. Rob, would you like to get your plugs in?
At Rob Schamberger on Twitter and Instagram, Art of Rob Schamberger on Facebook. You can go to robschamberger.com to see my art and get original paintings and limited edition prints. Then also on WWE Shop, we've got, I think, over 100 different t-shirts and prints available now. And then on WWE Auction, we've got signed prints that sell out pretty quick. So if you see one on there you like, you better get it. And then also every Sunday, Canvas to Canvas on WWE's YouTube channel, you get to see how I make my paintings. And it's now the longest running original show on WWE's YouTube channel ever. Nice. Coming up on the 200th episode.
Congratulations.
Thanks. The weekend before WrestleMania. So pretty dang awesome.
And I know a lot of us will be stopping by your booth at Access to this at WrestleMania in New Orleans.
I'm doing Access.
We're glad you're going to be there. We can't wait to see you.
Yeah. I haven't decided yet what I'll be painting there. I'm leaning towards whatever match Asuka is in. The few years I've done, Brock Lesnar or Reigns a few too many times. So I think I want to change it up. And I think this is the year to do one of the women. And we're going to have some cool sign prints there. I'm going to have one that is a recent painting I did of the NXT Four Horsewomen, signed four.
Man, that's awesome. Yeah, that's great.
I did that last year. A different painting of them, and the first day when they open the doors, people come running in.
Yep.
They want to get first in line, or they want to get whatever exclusive item. And I was walking back to the table. I'd gone to use the restroom, and I'm coming back, and people are running past me. And someone actually shoves me to the side, doesn't know it's me, and I hear them yell out, "Get out of the way! I got to get to Schamberger's booth before he sells out."
did you look at him and go, "Mark"?
Yeah.
Took his money.
Yeah, nice. That might have been Jeff. I apologize for him.
That was at WrestleMania 30, dude. I apologize.
I can't believe I was on your guys' show and didn't talk about this thing from a couple weeks ago. This is the story for you guys. So my wife's stepmother's mother, if you can track that, lives in Florida, and she's this old woman, doesn't give a damn about wrestling or toys or anything. But she was happy for me with the Mattel Elites. And so she was at Walmart and she wanted to find my toys. And she's standing there in the aisle and she doesn't know what she's looking for. And there's a guy with his daughter that's in the aisle too. And she turns to him and says, "Pardon me, sir, do you know anything about wrestling?" And he says, "Yes, yeah, I do." And she's like, "Well, my grandson-in-law is Rob Schamberger, and he did these toys. And the guy's like, oh, yeah, I know Rob. And pulls a toy off the shelf and says, this one's me. It was Bray Wyatt.
That is awesome.
That is such a great story.
What are the odds? Like, really?
I'm just a massive Bray Wyatt fan.
Jeff and I have been collecting since like 86, and not one time have we gone to the store and seen a wrestler like looking at wrestling figures. Like, what are the odds? We've been doing this for like over 30 years.
And instead, it's the, you know, and I'm sure I asked him about it because I was at a Raw with him a couple weeks ago, and he's like, you know, thinking like, oh God, it's a mark, right? And instead, it's this woman has no idea who he is. It's actually just this really pleasant thing. And he was like, this Raw was like a week after this thing happened, and it got picked up by like Sports Illustrated and USA Today.
Oh,
it was
great.
Nuts. And he was doing phone media to promote an upcoming show. And instead of asking about that show, all the journalists were only asking about this lost woman at Walmart. I'm sure WWE PR was thrilled.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's great.
Man, you guys have all the luck. She saw Bray Wyatt. I know Breaker has ran into Goto from New Japan Pro Wrestling looking for figures. And I'm like, man, we've been collecting for 30-something years. Why hasn't this happened to us?
That's the West Coast.
So that's a great story. We appreciate you telling that on the show. Yeah. Rob, we appreciate you taking the time out to do the show. Also, us being late, we apologize for that, and just you being a good sport about that. So we thank you deeply from us over here.
Oh, no problem. I do a lot of these things. You guys aren't even close to the least professional.
Okay, good.
Because we're really unprofessional.
Professionally unprofessional, I would like to say.
So, Rob, we want to thank you. Anything else?
I'm really amazing.
We agree.
Kidding. You guys are great. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for your time, Rob.
Thank you, Rob.